Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast, the podcast where we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope that it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors of sexual abuse too. We hope that you find it interesting, but more than that, if you are a survivor of sexual abuse, we hope that you find our discussion empowering.
Hello, podcast listeners. I'm Alan Collins. I'm the head of the abuse team at Hugh James, and I'm joined by my colleague, Felina Grosvenor. Hi, Felina.
Hi, Alan. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Thank you for having me. Aren't we polite? Anyway, so a topical issue for this week's podcast, and it's your suggestion, Felina, and that's about misconceptions around male sexual abuse. And you want to talk about, as I understand it, not just misconceptions, but the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Rather, it is the Pipers.
It's the Red Hot Chili Pipers.
Yes. So the reason why I thought of this topic was because of an article I saw, which was about the Red Hot Chili Piper, which is a, as far as I recall, a band of sorts, and they are of Scottish descent and they wear kilts. And the gentleman explained in the article the inappropriate behaviour he's experienced due to wearing a skirt, which is
a kilt. We've got to get the terminology right.
Apologies.
This is all about, isn't it? It's also, at one level, it's sort of ha-ha, he-he-he, slapstick comedy stuff, or what does a Scotsman wear under his kilt and all that kind of stuff. And we've all, of a certain generation, you see postcards at the seaside of, you know, kilts and what's under a kilt or not under the kilt maybe and all this kind of thing. And it's all, you know, supposedly at one level terribly amusing. But what you're pointing out is that this article actually, there is a very serious aspect to all of this.
Yes. Well, what I liked about the article is that it referred immediately to upskirting, which some of our listeners may recall became a criminal offence in the UK last year after severe campaigning of a lady called Gina Martin. And the focus throughout all of that campaigning was on women. I do not really recall men, Scottish men or men who wear kilts or other clothing that allows certain access, shall we say, to their underparts. But it is something that does apply to men, and it's something that you may never think of, but this article made me think of it, and it explained that it's just as bad and just as damaging to men.
Yes, and that's why there is this extremely serious side to the, you know, the superficial humorous aspect of kilts, men wearing kilts, what do men wear under their kilts, or whatever it is that they happen to be wearing. And it can be, as we know from our work with victims and survivors, just as distressing for a man to be groped, assaulted, or subjected to upskirting as it is for anybody else of any other gender.
Absolutely. And it made me think, when I'd finished reading, it made me think of what other examples there are of this. And something that first came to mind is the idea that a male student would be lucky if their attractive or older female teacher was interested in them. I think that's a very typical thing that's been used in films and television in the past, which is really harmful.
Yes, there's, you know, you can have even in mainstream media, you know, this sort of stereotyping and this sort of tolerance of behavior, which in fact is abusive. And you get mixed messaging very often through media, including mainstream media. But what is actually unacceptable is given a veneer of acceptability. Problem with all that is that it encourages abuse, covers up abuse. You know, it may be unintentional, but that is what the effect is.
That's exactly right, Alan. I was going to say, it's not just the fact that the person who has been abused thinks, oh, there is this level of tolerance, I can't come forward. But it also, quite rightly, as you said, it encourages the abuse to actually take place because this person, you know, it's not seen as bad. It's not seen as serious as it would if the gender roles were reversed.
Yes. I can remember a case not all that long ago involving a male media personality who, let's put it this way, had seriously misbehaved, but he was able to get away with it because in the environment that he was working in at the time, it was predominantly female, and the older females were extremely jealous of the attention that he gave to certain younger members of that team. And they knew that the behaviour was unacceptable, but their view of it was completely distorted because they wanted him to divert his attentions from the younger members to them. And that's the sort of, oh man, how can I put it? It's another example of everything being put in reverse.
That's a good example of something that many of us, that wouldn't occur to us as something that may fuel abuse, even fueling it from those of us who mean no harm. So as you meant, the older women, it's not as if they wished for the abuse to take place, etc., but they were misguided and viewed the situation very differently as you would if the roles were reversed.
Yeah, they were jealous of the victim or victims.
Yeah.
And, these were people who would, I suspect, would never condone child abuse in any shape or form, but that's not how they saw it.
Mm.
You know, their whole perception of what was acceptable and unacceptable had been completely distorted.
Mm. I think another harmful myth I'd like to raise in relation to men specifically is the issue that it may be quite delicate for some listeners, but erection and ejaculation, there's a lot of misconception, and I think particularly for young victims, young survivors, that they can't come forward if they got an erection or if they ejaculated, as if this for some reason means that they consented to what happened.
Yes, exactly. It's a subject that people don't like to talk about for understandable reasons. It's very personal, very private, and, you know, we're sort of brought up and raised not to talk about that sort of thing. And it's an issue, and it creates a barrier in coming forward, and it causes even further damage.
Absolutely. And I think this example specifically is used by perpetrators because it's known, as you said, this is something that we're not really brought up to talk about. It's very private, and it discourages particularly younger survivors to disclose the abuse, which abusers know. They use this myth, this really damaging myth, to their benefit.
That's right, which may be a subject for another podcast one day, but we shall see. These conversations help challenge some of the myths and difficult aspects of all of this that we all find so difficult to talk about. So thanks, Felina, for bringing this to our attention. Thank you very much. Thank you, podcast listeners. As always, if you have any questions or comments or thoughts, then please do get in touch, whether about this podcast or any of our previous podcasts. As I said, please do get in touch. And I hope you can join us with our next podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favourite podcast player. If you'd like to speak to us about something you've heard today, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.